We're back.
Hi, Calvin. We're doing this wonderful step in the exploration of mathemusics, where we now are looking at the way tetrionics can describe these principles of vibration in the body and how they link cell communications into what we experience as our mind and our participation in creation. And in the previous episode, I did a nice carried on exploration of the implication of what you just said before. That in biology we need to describe how matter and mind are linked. And I gave some examples of how I see that that works in our body and how that has been addressed by various cultures. And I already said that there is a lot more to explore in what we haven't discussed yet in the conversation on tetrionics, which is what happens at the level of the particle zoo. And you've already stepped way beyond that in your own development, because you're already applying the implications of that in biology, which is in fact biologics, so that the biological is the basis of what we can process as information in our being.
Yep.
So you already said, well, that's nice to take that further. So that's where I suggested, okay, let's close off my reflection on how mind and body, or body, soul, mind, body, soul, and spirit are linked, also in the development of our species, and how we are thereby all linked to each other and also linked to all life forms. And you already had some ideas of where you would like to take next. So what was the connection that you would like to address now?
Well, it's just a simple point, really. I mean, like, we've done a fairly detailed discussion on differentiating mass from matter, and how it's the mass that gives or breathes life into the inorganic matter to make it organic. In my work in tetrionics, I obviously extended that through to look at how these fields of mass energy can facilitate communication between particles. And like, the obvious one that jumps out is like shown in illustration 9804, is where two fields of mass energy radiate out from matter and overlap. Where they overlap, and you've got to remember that these fields radiate at the speed of light, so they travel outwards very quickly and cover vast distances. But where these fields overlap, they can not only share information about the particles between the particles, but they're also the source of force between the particles, i.e. Coulomb's law, where the electron knows where the proton is and how fast it's moving and how it should react to it, even though they could be vast distances apart, and there's no explanation for that mechanics. It's the same mechanics as what happens in gravity that Newton couldn't explain. Physics these days tends to dream up virtual particles, etc., to explain it. And there again, reflecting that they're focused on material objects. They say that we create a physical particle which then reaches out and interacts with the other particle at a distance and then disappears, so as to maintain the balance of energy in the universe. It's not how they work. Tetrionics clearly shows that it's the fields of mass energy that reach out between the particles to share information and to develop these forces. And what that illustration there is showing is simply, as we alluded to in the previous discussion, I think, or maybe the one before, the mass energy fields, the chem or bem or field, EM fields of any material object, contain information about that particle by virtue of the distribution of the Planck quanta in that field. You know what sort of charge the particle is, whether it's positive or negative net charges. You know the mass energy of the particle, because the mass energy of the radiant field is proportional to the mass energy and the temperature of the particle. it's also proportional to the velocity, and it points in the vector direction of motion. So you know the motion, you know the charge, you know the mass energy of the particle. All this information is stored, whether you want to term it holographically or in a statistical distribution of energy within that field, but however you want to describe it, those fields of mass energy contain that information. They reach out at the speed of light, and they inform distant particles, separated particles, about the particles in their vicinity. Now, each particle, a proton, might have trillions of these fields reaching out and interacting with it, pulling it in every direction. But the proton will act and react in accord with the information in that mass energy field. So as that illustration shows, if you overlap two fields in a highly simplistic way, you can see that the linear momentum of the systems overlaps to reinforce or either act constructively or destructively, depending on their charge arrangements, to create a force of either attraction or repulsion between the particles. And that's proportional to the velocity of the particles, the vector direction of the particles' motion. All this information is contained in those two simple fields and how those fields interact at a distance. So it's not the matter that's telling other particles where it is and where it's going. It's the EM fields of mass energy that surround those particles that give that information, that convey the information. It stores it, conveys it, and allows the action and reaction of particles to each other. Those fields drive our universe. That's what creates all the motion. So if you take those fields with the information content, and like in that one, it's just simplistically a distribution, a normal distribution, or a Gaussian distribution, depending on how you want to look at it. But it's just the statistical distribution of information about the particle. So tetrionics then shows that that field is generated by all matter. And all matter, so far as elements upward, are composed of deuterium nuclei. And that brings us to illustration 9806. When I first looked at how you could develop quantum computers and utilize natural processes to do computations, etc., the obvious thing was the chem fields of electrons in deuterium nuclei. As you apply more energy, you've got up and down spins, you've got information that changes depending on the direction of spin, upon the velocity, the angular velocity of the particle itself. All this sort of information changes the information in those fields. So you can put two deuterium nuclei together, just as nature does in elements to make compounds and molecules and the human body. You bring two deuterium nuclei together, and you can think of those deuterium nuclei as PNN transistors, where if you apply energy to that deuteron, it will cause the electron to spin faster, because the electron has a low mass charge ratio compared to the deuteron itself. There's a high gain, or a little bit of energy applied to the deuteron causes the electron to spin rapidly and create a huge field, a much larger field than applying a force to the deuterium nuclei itself would create. The magnetic moments and the chem fields of protons versus electrons is well known and well established. The electron creates a much stronger magnetic moment and possesses a much stronger chem field for a smaller applied force to the particle, F equals ma, or P equals mv, however you want to look at it. So you can use these spinning quantum rotors, the electrons, to create a chem field. And that chem field, when you allow it to overlap, with the information in it can act as a quantum computer, a la the first illustration I spoke of, 98.04. Two fields overlap either constructively or destructively. You can measure the force, so you can do a computation simply by measuring the force between two deuterium nuclei that are trying to interact with their fields. Alternatively, you can do a spectral analysis of the interference pattern produced by those two overlapping fields, because spinning electrons in deuterium nuclei will produce spectral lines, and those spectral lines can produce interference patterns when they overlap or interact, superposition to constructively or destructively interfere with each other. And that's what led me to 9805, which gave me an answer for the P versus NP problem, or gave me a solution for the P versus NP, which gave us an equality where not only could we do extremely fast parallel computations, because the information in those fields is not limited to just one bit of information, it's the entire field that interacts with another entire field. So how you arrange the information in each field can be thought of as inputs to a computer problem. And then all you have to do is allow those two fields to interact to give you, and then measure their outputs to give you the solution, the answer to the question posed by the inputs. In this case, in that illustration, I simply said, well, you can generate two electrostatic fields, and that's what you see there, which is basically a photon geometry, bilateral radiation of energies, two electrostatic fields even, if you like. And as those fields propagate out, like any other wave, you can place a detector either side, and you can measure the intensities and the interference pattern produced, and you can then use that to calculate answers to specific questions, whether it's a simple 1+1 or a prime number by a prime number, makes no difference to the fields. You just tell the field via an applied voltage or an applied force, either one, the initial conditions that you want the calculation to be done on. The two fields then interact irrespective of time, because this is a two massively parallel fields of information interacting instantaneously to give you an instant result. So it's not like a normal computer algorithm where you say 10 times 10 and it goes 10 plus 10 plus 10 10 times to give you the answer. This just goes field by field equals, and it doesn't matter how complex the posited questions are. So long as you can encode the information in the EM field, you can get an instant answer. And it bypasses time in that respect. So the time component of P versus NP no longer applies. And this is how organic molecules and inorganic molecules communicate. This is how an electron talks to a proton or another electron light years apart. The fields dissipate as inverse squared. But if you bring that back in, just like we shrink down silicon circuits at present to make them more efficient and process faster, we can do the same thing. This has the added advantage that we don't have electrons running around creating resistance and dissipating heat in small circuits. We're using light to create the inputs, and light, and we're measuring light as the outputs. So it runs cold. It can be shrunk right down to the size of individual atoms. A carbon atom has 6 deuterium nuclei in it. If you wanted a 92-bit or a 92-field processor, use uranium. So you can tailor make the number of elements simply by the elements that you choose to do the processing. Or if you want a supermassive computer, you just break down carbon into its component deuterium nuclei, which is simple enough to do when you think about it, and then you put it into a soup. And then you can have as many elements doing these computations as you want. Smear them out as a graphite sheet, or graphene sheet, and then you can run your input wires to each and every single one, or groups of them. Do your processing, measure the light output that it gives, and the interference patterns, and you have your answers, irrespective of the time component, which is what the P versus MP problem was first posited for. Is it possible to do away with series computations? Can you do a massively parallel computation, irrespective of the time constraints, instead of going one operation, then the next operation, then the next operation? Can we just do all three operations at once? And that's what these EM fields allow you to do. And that's what gets, when it gets really exciting in tetrionics, because as we move into these sort of developments, what we're doing so because we've differentiated between mass and matter. Again, we know that the matter is simply the mechanics to create these fields. We can grab the deuterium nuclei, put a plus and minus lead to the either side, to the proton and neutron. As we apply more power, we create bigger fields with different distributions, depending on which way the electron's spinning and how fast it's spinning, etc. So we can then use that information, or those fields, those immaterial fields that we can't see, never will see, to create the interference patterns. Or we can use them to create a force and measure the force between the things to do massive calculations. And just that there's various ways that you can measure the outputs, just as there's various ways that mass energy operates in nature to bring about life and to bring about the mechanics of the universe from the quantum level upwards. But in order to wrap your head around how all this works and that these things are possible, first you have to understand tetrionics and how it builds particles, how it differentiates between mass and matter, and how those particles actually operate as quantum electrodynamic devices, quantum synchronous converters with their little rotors in them. But they're just tiny. The deuterium nuclei is just a tiny electromechanical device. Just this, it's exactly the same device as the one-story 15-ton converters that Westinghouse and Tesla built to supply power, to store and supply power to San Francisco trams. Exactly the same device, works exactly the same way, except it's at the quantum scale. And once you realize that, you can then start applying electromechanical or electrical theory to quantum processes to give us all these sort of fantastic devices. A quantum organic computer will process many magnitudes faster than our current supercomputers. It will be many magnitudes smaller and use many magnitudes, orders of magnitude less energy and produce less heat in the process. It's an entirely new technology, an entirely new way of encoding and processing and storing information. Because there again, you can use these graphite sheets of deuterium nuclei to act as memory cells. Every single one of those deuterium nuclei has a spin up or spin down orientation. So in addition to storing storing complex parallel processing fields of mass energy, the orientation of those fields can be used as a basic information storage like we do now, except these are quantum levels and we're using nothing more than graphite to do all this. So nanotechnology based on carbon nanotubes and that sort of stuff has only just begun to scratch the surface of what carbon is capable of. That'll went up. But there again, it's just mass, energy, and matter. Mm-hmm. Knowing how it works, being able to visualize the components in reality, thanks to tetrionic theory, and understand how it works in nature, so that we can use those processes for new technologies for humanity.
I'd like to connect up to that, Gavin. I already heard you pause a bit. So maybe this is a nice point to connect it up to this link between mind and matter, mind and body, on the one hand, but also the link between health and disease on the other. Because you have now beautifully described that biology is a computational effect, that the movement of the matter is only the immediate outcome of the interaction of the electromagnetic field. I call the electromagnetic field and the interactions there the spirit level, and the response of the material substrate the physical level. Then biology is precisely that interplay, how the matter responding to what happens at the level of the information coordination.
Yeah.
So call it the mass versus matter, or the energy versus the manifestation. But then we can also call it the mind versus the body. Then we can also look at it as health and disease. Of course, health and disease is a different perspective on the same. Because when we're looking at mind and body, which is essentially mass versus matter in the tetrionic notation, then we're talking about states. We're talking about the state of the invisible electromagnetic field as mind, and we're talking about the state of the physical, the material, as that what responds to electromagnetic field. So the body is then a manifestation of the spirit, as the traditional forms of healthcare philosophies always describe that. But then health and disease are basically the interactional field. So where with mind and matter, we are talking about mass versus matter in tetrionics. With health and disease, we are talking about different interactions in the overlap field, the alpha field, the where the electromagnetic fields are in overlap, for which the material is then just a mirroring effect, an amplifier, a resonator, the manifestation. And in biology, you're still working at the level of the showing how the electromagnetic fields lead to the more and more refined forms of, let's call it, understanding, coherence, consciousness, the molecules as manifestations of complexities of interactions at the field level, and storage for that as well. So every molecule is a handle on a very complex field interaction, which is a computation in itself, or a consciousness in itself, because the calculation, the result in the P versus NP approach are the same. But then there is also that level where in mathemusics I'm looking at the transition between health and disease, which would be at the level of the overlap of electromagnetic fields. And how in tetrionics is it described that these fields are still processing the computation, that there's no result as yet, that let's call the state of health is that there is an outcome, the state of disease is that there is still a transition taking place. How would you describe that in tetrionic notation?
Well, there we go back to our implosion, explosion, changes of energy momenta in the BEM fields. The BEM fields are far more complicated and complex than what I've illustrated in 2D. I'm just trying to find an illustration that might go some way to showing it. But if you think of a star with its diamond-shaped fields, or its two positive charges pointing outwards. There's trillions and trillions of those fields pointing outwards. Each one of them has information in it. It has energy, momenta in it, and it's reacting to the environment as well as creating an impact on the environment itself. And as that the balance between the environment and the BEM field of the matter itself takes place or occurs, you're going to get this dynamic flux increasing and decreasing, so creating these spirals we started talking about first off tonight. And in the process, there'll be some states or some positions on those spirals that are conducive to a healthy organism and some spots that just don't work. And that's your states of disease or health. And how the body responds if it goes into a position where the environment's negatively affecting its radiance and its fields, and it's not working with it, and it's negatively impacting it, then you can say it's a state of disease. Then you've got to look at how the organism itself sets about rectifying that state of disease to return itself back to a healthy state, whether it can do it or whether it just ends up in a situation where it gets worse and worse. That initial change leads to far more serious changes, so the spiral continues downward to the point where biological life is no longer sustainable. So you've gone from ill health to disease to cancer to death. But it might be a case somewhere along that action-reaction of energy momenta, of the BEM fields, of organic life to that environment where it can counteract the problems that are being created, the negativity, and it stops that implosion and starts to work the energy in the other way. So it starts to spiral back out to increase its energies to a state of where it's happy with in equilibrium with the environment. So it returns to health. And it may even get to a stage where in that process it's discovered a better food source, or it's moved to a better position, or sought shelter, whatever, however you want to describe it. And that health situation may go beyond health and go to thriving, where the energy is increased and it's got more energy to expend on other things that it wouldn't have had normally, because the conditions it's found itself in, or the way it's interacting with the environment, is more conducive to excess energies being created. So you've got energies to do other things with. So this the creation of matter, firstly, the organization of matter into more complex forms, creates these fields, and these fields interacting dynamically with the environment and influencing the environment around them gives us this flux of electromagnetic fields around the body, what we would call the aura or the chakra or whatever. It's all about the intangible mass energies acting and reacting with the environment that it finds itself in. So if we fill the environment full of nonsensical 2.4 gigahertz Wi-Fi signals, the body goes, oh, that's lovely, I'll start to use that. And then it goes, well, hang on, I can't make sense of the information. It doesn't seem to apply to anything. Well, it's, what am I going to do? It's excess information, excess energy. Well, I'll store it over here. And before you know it, you've got a rampant growth of cells that are trying to store this energy and encode it in a way that it might be useful later. It develops into a cancer that metastasizes. Take the energy, the circumstances that created that excess energy away from the body, and the body may be able to recover from that. Continue to leave it in that environment, and most certainly, even if you take chemo drugs and have operations to fix the material problem, you're still putting yourself, when you go back home, back into that Wi-Fi saturated environment that then starts to fire up more cells and more cancers. So we've got to look at this immaterial interaction. There's a direct relationship between the material entities that make up our bodies and the immaterial mass energies they radiate. And both of those things, the matter and the mass energies, interact with our environment. And the environment accordingly interacts with it. That's why we've got a skin. I mean, like, the skin's there to form a barrier so that we have our internals acting protected from the externals to some degree. But the whole body's in this, just like the universe, I see the whole body as being in a state of dynamic equilibrium, contracting, expanding, given the environment it finds itself in and the conditions that it finds that are either conducive or not conducive to life itself. So it's just this dynamic flux, if you like. But the key thing that's playing the major role is not the material matter. The material matter is just creating these mass energy fields, the immaterial fields. They're the key components. That's where the information is about the body, about the molecules, about what those molecules need, whether it needs more energy, more compounds, whatever. That information is in those fields. How the molecules move once they're in the body, that information and those actions are determined by the fields, not by the solid matter itself. The solid matter's, like, if you want to think of it another way, is a bit like a residue. It's the initial precipitate, if you like, that creates the mass energy fields, the immaterial fields. But while the immaterial fields have a connection to what the material matter is, the material matter does not, to any great degree, influence or affect the storage, transmission of information and the forces within the body. That's all done by these immaterial fields of mass, energy, momentum.
Yeah, I just had an association with that. I like this phrase of matter is immaterial, and the immaterial fields matter.
Mm.
And the fields in biology are also always information. And in that sense, they are fields of information in formation, and matter is always a form of information.
Yeah. Yeah, you find lots of word plays like that pop up.
Yeah,
English
yeah.
is a lovely thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially when applied to physics. Can do wonderful things and disastrous things.
Yeah. Implied in what you just said, I realized that there is a level where we haven't discussed much yet, which is part of the story of tetragonics, which we are still going to unfold and explore, which is that of the, say, the chemistry. And I suddenly realized in what you said that the principle of health and healing are implied in that transition from a tetrion to an atom. And that it is in that level of the subatomic elements, the particle zoo, that the circles and the spirals are actually what creates those patterns of coherence. And that at that level we also see the essence of mathemusics, that there are different patterns of resonance, and in that way the subatomic particles are always particular forms of resonance. They are wave fields, they are information fields, they are results of computation which have their own local coherence, and as a result tetrions are kept in a stable configuration, basically, because like in cymatics, which is where sound waves can be used to vibrate sand on a plate of glass on top of the loudspeaker into pattern of coherence, that likewise all of these subatomic particles are cymatic forms of resonance, that they show patterns of coherence in the vibrational field underlying them, and that in that sense they are also forms of results, outcomes of computations of coherent fields, of fields of information, just as Phil Callahan said, that the orgones are actually standing waves or wave solitons which can maintain their coherence locally in time, but they're not manifest, they're not physical, because they are radio waves, they're forms of information. And so in that sense, then the subatomic particles have these tetrions as resonators, like the sand particles on the cymatic sound field over the loudspeaker, showing that there is this resonant field there, and that there is something else to that, because evidently for a field, an electromagnetic field in that form of resonance, there is an ease of stabilizing that resonance in forming the tetrion. But as a result of that tetrion being formed, let's call it the circulation in the body which has stabilized itself, the form of health which has manifested itself, then the principle of manifestation and the principle of health has, in what you've just described, become exactly the same. And that also implies then that there is a level in this unfoldment from the tetrions to the atoms, in this in-between level of the subatomic particles, the leptons, the mesons, and baryons, that at that level the fields actually will pop out tetrions to stabilize the information field which has been created. And I see that you have the wonderful picture of the radiant 2D mass energy momenta field surrounding 3D matter to illustrate just that. And that at that level, let's say the tetrions are then the equivalent of health. The creation of the tetrion would be the process of disease, and disease is then not a sick process anymore. A disease is simply the spiraling dynamic, as opposed to the let's call it the circular dynamic. So there is a level in tetrionic development where the fields interact, and at some point they interact as circles. Let's call that the top-down view of the concentric triangles, which we've discussed in a previous session. And the other part of the concatenated, say the side view of the triangles, that there are triangles within triangles within triangles, but they're all aligned to the tip. So they're not concentric, but they form a power cascade. So that concentric form of the triangles would be the equivalent of the circles. And we discussed that then also at the level of the circles. And I did a nice stampede on the equivalent of that image with health at the different levels of the divisions of Chinese medicine. Whereas that side view of the triangle superimposed on the triangle with the focal point at one end is actually the parallel of what we see in our body with the organs integrating that, with the regulatory system defining that, with the brain on top of that, putting its perspective in the context. So there is something in that where we can see that the top view of the triangles within triangles, the concentric organization, would be the equivalent of circles of health, and the side view of the say the cone of triangles, say like half a vortex in cross section, are the equivalent of the spirals and the dynamic of disease. And then of course if this can be brought out in further detail, which you apparently have already done, then we can show that disease is not sick. Disease is just a spiraling form which has not yet been balanced in the context. And in the same way that you just described, that Wi-Fi energy will be funneled into the body and stockpiled there, but get stuck there, as a result of which cells will be supersaturated with blocked frequencies, and as a result they cannot get out of that gridlock and cannot adapt, as a result of which they will just replicate and replicate and replicate and replicate in the most dumbest of manner. But in the healing of cancer, all that needed to be done is that the other part of the spiral is brought in, as a result of which that charge can be discharged in an elegant and coherent manner, and the cells start to synchronize their replication rhythm to that of the cells around them again, and the disease has been resolved. So now suddenly you have found a nice formulation of something which is very well known, especially in traditional healthcare, that if you understand the disease process, then you can also understand that diseases are patterns of development of cycles which actually got stuck in time. A couple of years ago I did a paper for a journal when they were addressing the form of chronic diseases, and I explained to the readers that chronic diseases are actually achronic diseases. Chronic diseases, which continue in time, are in fact diseases which stand outside of time. So the body initiated a transition process, but in a way it got disconnected from the process of change of the environment, as a result of which it just continued in the body, but it no longer was connected to that environmental pattern that it formed part of. So in that sense, chronic diseases are achronic, or are timeless diseases, because a form of adaptation in the body just got sealed off. It became a little island. And the solution for achronic diseases, or which people know as chronic diseases, that the diseases out of time need to be put back into time. And that's what homeopathy does. It looks for those patterns where somebody got stuck. It shows the information of the connection to the context, which actually leads to that kind of disturbance, as a result of which the whole body goes into that type of connection to the context, because the information is put into the body. It doesn't need a material form to do so. As a result of which the body as a whole responds to that information, reconnects to that situation of connectedness in the context, as a result of which that disease suddenly becomes very actual again, because it is now virtually connected to that environment in which it did play a role. But because the body is now able to process it, it is then possible to metabolize, to eliminate that disease from the system. So there is a very simple logic to resolve chronic diseases. You bring the body back to the moment that disease was created, and kinesiology, for example, is a very elegant way to do that. You go into the memory of that time, reconnect it to the digestive processes of the meridians, which in kinesio called a meridian balance. Actually, you turn on the metabolic process of the organs to digest that experience in the past, as a result of which that cluster of processes of information, of vibrations, is reconnected to a spiral, and in that sense had the metabolic system, the healthy metabolism is a circulation, continued circulation, which is at the core of mathemusics, which is what we are discussing again today. But at the same time, we need to see how these internal circulations, how the circulation in the body is like the circulation in the torus. The body as a whole is the shape of a torus, but that it is driven by that fall through of food through the gut, the information falling through the sensory system, which is that vortex going through the torus. In that sense, in the topological mathematics, there is a direct relationship between a vortex and a donut, the torus. The vortex is the flow that goes around, and the torus is the form that results within. And that's also what you see in Chinese medicine, where they talk about the hollow organs and the solid organs. The hollow organs are translators, they move things, they're transport functions like the gut, And the solid organs, they digest things. They transform things internally. So you've translation for the hollow organs and transformation for the solid organs. But in the mathematics, that would be the vortex, the translation, the displacement, and the torus would be the transformation, the internal continuity. So I reckon that there is something at the level of the creation of the subatomic particles, as something which is already seen at the level of the tetrions forming the quarks and the electrons, where this pattern of the interplay between the spiral and the circle is seen at different levels of harmonic coherence. Because that is what I understand that happens in the body, in the cells forming the organs, forming the body as a whole. That is all about different levels of harmonic coherence. And that's why I started to look for music as a way to describe that. Because the music, of course, we know about very complex levels of harmonic coherence. Many instruments playing together, many parts of symphonies together, creating a whole orchestral composition. But in the body, we see it as the body having very different organs, having very, very different cells, and a very pronounced underlying cell replication dynamic, which also is the dynamic of the vortex. So in the cell division, we see that same principle of not a torus, but in this case, a sphere, connecting via a vortex into another sphere. So in the body, we see that two cells together are actually a form of a virtual torus. They're like parts of the torus, which in fact is shown by the principle of the yin and yang. The two sides of the torus having two different spheres being connected. And in tetrionics, which you have now made very explicit in this relationship between the circles and the spirals, thanks to your contribution to mathematics there, I see that there is a level of understanding where these spheres or circles and these spirals or vortices are actually part of the same system, and I assume that there is something at the level of the particle zoo where all of this actually is precisely the machinery of the electromagnetic fields leading to the say the flotsam of the on the ocean, or the froth on the swamp, showing what's going on at this otherwise invisible level of electromagnetic fields. I don't know if you have a reaction to that, but if you do, maybe it's a good idea to put it in a separate recording, or do you think it would fit nicely up with this?
No, do a separate one. Because we'll end up off track again.
Okay, let me just close off this recording then.
There's a lot to
because this is where I realized that in what you've just described, the relationship between health and disease is actually that of circles and spirals in the notation of mathemusic of tetrionics. And my question is, where in tetrionics is it most visible that it is that relationship between spirals and circles putting matter in place? So I'll come back to you in just a bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Okay.